Hi, everyone. Before we get started with today's episode, I need to address some recent news. And also, I want to issue a trigger warning for the next minute or two. I'm going to be talking about sexual assault. So if that's trigger for you, fast forward a minute or two until we get to the start of the episode. So at the end of February 2020, a woman came forward with the story that alleged that Timothy Hutton raped her shortly after he became famous. I don't want to go into the details here, but the story was originally published on BuzzFeed News. So if you want to read the full account, you can go there and find it. What I do want to make clear here is that we here at Let's Go Steal a Podcast believe the victim and we stand with her. I've discussed this issue with my other co-host, and we honestly did consider just stopping the podcast altogether. But we have, at this moment in time anyways, decided to move forward. While none of us would currently support a Leverage reunion, the fact is we were fans of the show before these allegations broke. We're going to do our best to separate the character of Nate Ford from the actor who played him. And as always, we're going to apply a critical eye to what the show is saying in every instance, just the way that I feel that we have for the past three seasons of the show. But as the story develops, we might need to change this. But as this story develops, we might need to change this approach. And I'll keep you updated as we, you know, as the story develops, we may need to change this approach though. And I'll keep you updated if we decide to do something different. And as always, I welcome, And as always, I welcome your thoughts on how we should handle this going forward. Thank you, and let's move on to this episode of Let's Go Steal a Podcast. Okay, welcome back, everybody. You know, to a special coronavirus episode of Let's Go Steal a Podcast. Today we're going to be talking about the grave danger job, and I have noted coffin escaper Lisa Lynn.
Hey, y'all.
Did you like that I just made up a fact about you?
Sure, why not?
Have you ever escaped from a coffin before?
I am... You in the Hardison camp, that it is a claustrophobic, like, situation I want no part of?
Yeah, that was my second question. Like, are you claustrophobic?
In certain situations, and then in a, like, and then considering that it is a coffin, yeah. Like, yeah. Crowds, kind of, like, I'm not a fan, but, like, I'm okay. Mm-hmm. But, like, a coffin situation, like, it just reminds me of that episode of Bones.
Oh, yeah, when they're in the car.
Where, like, Bones and Hodges were trapped in that car and they were buried and they literally had, like, 2 hours of oxygen. I mean, I may not like crowds, but at least, like, I'm not afraid of running out of oxygen.
Yeah. Well, crowds, like, being afraid of, like, not liking to be surrounded by crowds and claustrophobia. Two totally different phobias, right?
Yeah. I guess so.
Yeah. I am claustrophobic. So this whole episode, like, gives me the heebie-jeebies. I'm not a small person, and so the idea of being trapped in a small space is very...
I am not a coffin fan.
Okay.
No. So,
Yeah, so no. And I'm debating whether I want to, like, when I, like, if I want to be cremated or buried. Like, that is a decision I have yet to make.
Hmm. Yeah, no, I would definitely want to be cremated. Mm. Because, again, the idea of being stuck in the ground. Unless it could be, like, planted in one of those, like, weird...
Yeah, okay, so you want to be cremated. Like, are you going to have, like, a fancy-ass, like, decorated urn?
No. No, I don't want to stay in an urn. I'd probably want to be scattered somewhere. I don't know where.
Like, a Scorpio, you're a water sign, so, like, want to be one with the ocean?
I could be one with the ocean. There's a song by one of my favorite singers, and he talks about, like, when he dies, he wants to be cremated and then tossed into London's drinking supply so that he, like, people drink him, and then he also, like, goes out into the rivers and out into the ocean, and then he'll be part of the whole world.
That's a little creepy, a little gross, and a little weird, because if he's in the drinking supply, Londoners drink him in, and then he goes back out the other way, no?
Yeah, that's fine. That's the circle of life.
Like, I try not to be squeamish. I mean, about, you know, about, especially, like, bodily functions are what they are, but, like, but to deliberately want to be part of someone's... No, okay. Okay. I'm just going to accept that. It's just one of those things that I'm not going to understand and let people do their, like, you, exactly. They do, let them do them.
We all have different... Yeah. And he's more like, I'm going to be absorbed into the body. It's that, so I don't think he's thinking about the other end.
I mean... This is very circle of life. Like when Mufasa tells Simba, yes, we eat the antelope, but when we die, our bodies become the grass the antelope eat.
Exactly. And then we get pooped out by them, and then that fertilizes the rest of us, and yeah, it becomes better grass. This makes sense.
Did you see the...
caveat. We're going to have to, like, really edit this out.
Okay. Okay, tell us about this episode, Steve.
So, this episode aired on August 14th, 2011. It was directed by John Harrison, and this one was written by Rebecca Kirsch, who had worked on the staff, but not as a staff writer, so this is her first writing credit for Leverage. And then she went on to write a bunch of other things as well.
Oh, I remember on John's blog, like, he would, like, call her, like, filthy assistant or something. And then, like, he gave her major props for, like, moving up the ladder and ending up being, like, holding her own in the writer's room and everything. He was very proud of her.
Well, that's cool. I didn't realize that. I love that.
Yeah.
So in this episode, when the team takes on a funeral home who is conning people out of their money and identities, things take a turn for the worse when they're targeted by the gang that the funeral home is doing business with. Mm-hmm. I think this is, and we haven't had bad guys in a while who were a family. Right? Like, we've had, it's been, like, business. Business guys. Like, the last episode was the carnival job, and it was a dad, but his daughter wasn't in on it. And then he turned out to not be the totally bad guy.
Was the last one who was, like, a family? What?
I mean, was it the snow job?
Oh, yes. Yes.
But is that really the last one?
I guess we'd have to think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe, like, the Van Gogh job with Dorothy's dad.
But she wasn't a bad guy, too. And she didn't have siblings.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
I don't know. Like, that's the only feeling that comes to mind.
Or maybe the wedding job, the whole mom family thing.
Yeah, but I think the wife was just, like, you know, complicit because she knew her husband was bad. She wasn't actually helping him.
Yeah. But then the runway job, like, I think Gloria and Russell really
worked. Ah, you're right. The runway job.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But they were, yeah, and they were like a couple. But yeah, it's, I think it's been a while since we had a parent-child dynamic.
With or the like in the bottle job. Like the Doyle, he's part of the mob family. I mean, I don't know.
No, you're right. You're right. But we just don't see them because they're
But that's fair. It's usually just like one person. You're right.
The mayor in the finale of season two.
Oh, the baseball, the three strikes job, and then the
he was from a long line of crooks. Oh. We only saw him, but yeah,
crooks, I think politicians, same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, I think this is cool that we don't see this very often, and it's a fun kind of, like, what's the dynamic here with the mom and the two sons?
Mm-hmm.
We open this episode with Hardison in the dark waking up to a phone ringing, and he realizes that he is trapped in a coffin.
Not good. No bueno.
Like, you never want to wake up like that. I read too many scary stories as a preteen about people getting buried alive in coffins. Oh my God. I don't know why, but there was like a time in my life where like, I swear to God, I read like 10 short stories about stuff like that. And that sticks with me.
Oh. Like, I was never like a mystery horror person, really. Yeah.
Okay, let's get back to the episode.
So, he's waking up in a coffin. He's like, no bueno. He's freaking out.
Yeah, and we were talking earlier about being claustrophobic ourselves. You know, whether or not we were. Aldous Hodge is not. So he was like, yeah, sure, let's do it. I'm fine. And he was not freaked out by this at all.
That boy is game for anything.
He really is. I love him so much. Okay, so then we flash back. You know, we've set up this like anxiety that something horrible is happening to Hardison. And then we flash back to 2 weeks earlier at a funeral home. And we see a brother and sister who are like distraught and they're arguing with the director of the funeral home. And we see that she conned their dad out of his life savings. And she's like, just, you know, come in here to the office and we'll figure something out. And then her sons like beat up the brother and are like, let it go. Don't say anything or we'll hurt you more.
Like, you'll think you got off lucky.
Yeah.
Like, ugh. And shout out to Anne-Marie Johnson.
Yes.
Who's playing Darlene Wicket.
She is so good.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
I remember she was Congresswoman Bobby Latham on JAG. That is, I remember.
Yes. Oh, I love JAG.
And then she was Donna Cabana on That's So Raven.
Okay.
But apparently it's like she is a really good comedian. But she just seems to have this like elegant poise about her, you know, mm-hmm. like really pulled together and polished. Like there's just something about like the hair, the clothes, and like it just she just seems like really polished, not necessarily someone who's like a like you know, a physical like comedian or something like that. But apparently she's very funny. But, like, not in this role.
No. Also, she is so tall. She's 5'11". And then when she's in heels, like, she's as tall as Hardison is, like, in their scenes together. I'm like, what?
Allison Janney is 6 feet.
Yeah. Sweetie, that's so off topic.
No. I'm just saying, like, they're tall actresses in Hollywood. This is Anne-Marie Johnson.
But they're not on Leverage.
But I'm just saying, maybe the height goes back to how well like the clothes wear and like plays into the look. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
This is what we do. We just gotta roll with this.
I never know where a conversation's gonna go with you. Ever. Ever. I can usually guess that it'll be your West Wing at some point. Then the brother and, I guess it's really just the sister, goes to Nate, and she explains everything, that her dad had pancreatic cancer, I think. They got it in
late stage, very bad. Yeah.
So he was on doing chemo treatments, and this woman like preyed on him, like came up to him, and he wanted to take care of his funeral arrangements and then leave some money aside for his kids so they'd be taken care of. And he gave her $15,000, but when he passed away, there was no contract. And so she just took the money and is saying, I don't know what you're talking about. And then like, these are my favorite clients who are just like, I don't like, cause they had to then max out credit cards to pay for their dad's funeral. And they're like, we don't even want the money back. We just don't want her to hurt anybody else. And you're like,
Oh my God, sweet, sober children.
Your dad was wonderful, I'm sure, and you were wonderful, and he did a good job.
Sweet, sober children. And I will say that there is a particular level of evil in this sort of scam. Because, yeah. like, you are preying on a family or someone when they're in their most vulnerable end of life. And as I'm sure you know, like, we all learn at some point how expensive funerals are, and they are expensive.
Yeah.
So it is particularly very evil.
Yeah, it's heinous. You know, like, it's that cost, and it's also just the grief that you're swamped by. Like, you can't think of things clearly.
You're just in this like stew of like stress and grief and confusion, and you don't know which way is up, and someone just comes in and swoops in and just messes with you like that. Like, yeah,
it's unpardonable.
Nope.
And Nate, I thought it was interesting that Nate's like meeting them by himself, but then it makes sense in a second. But he's like, you know, he says, you know, your dad's in a better place. Like, I'm sure he's really proud of you. And then they leave, you know, he's like, thank you for, you know, we'll figure this out for you. And then he knows that Parker is right behind him. She's like hiding in the booth behind him. And she's really concerned. She's like, how do you know, or how do they know he's in a better place? And, you know, Nate tells her faith, because Nate's a good Catholic boy, or maybe not.
He was this close to becoming a priest.
Yeah.
Good Catholic boy.
Yeah, and Parker's just a little, she doesn't know, you know, this season is all about Parker feeling things and figuring out.
Like, again, this is a really big, good Parker episode.
Oh my gosh, it's so good. And I think the first times, you know, I've seen this episode, the whole series a couple times, but the first couple times I didn't remember from the psychic job, whatever that episode was, I can't think of it right now.
Isn't it the boiler room job?
Mm.
The psychic? Oh, no, the future job with Luke Perry.
Yeah, so Luke Perry. The future job where we find out that Parker had a brother who died.
Yeah, yeah.
He has lots of feelings of responsibility and guilt over that she's really buried down, that definitely have something to do with how she, you know, is.
Luke Perry, may he rest in peace.
I know, rest in peace, Luke Perry. So she's like, obviously, like, this is something that she thinks about, and now that she's kind of unlocked having emotions again, they're all coming to the front, and that's going to really affect her throughout this whole episode.
She has a really lovely scene with Sophie about that later, but we'll get to that later.
So good. Beth Ristrap is amazing at growing this character.
How does she not receive like all the nominations?
I don't know. Because this was like a little cable show, and in 2011, cable shows weren't getting prizes unless they were like HBO. I agree. So, and then I love like she's, you know, eating her feelings, eating some cereal in the apartment, and Sophie notices right away. Like, she comes in and she's like already clocked her at the window, and she's like, "What's up with Parker?" And Nate's just like, "It's just Parker being Parker," which. I'm like, is he just trying to let Parker have space? Is he brushing off her feelings?
I mean, usually Parker being Parker just explains a lot.
Yeah.
Like, why is Parker in a nun costume? It's Parker being Parker. You know? Exactly. Who knows why Parker does the things she does?
Yeah. Oh, my nose itches. Okay.
I think he was just kind of like, focused on the job at hand. So, like, she's just not really paying attention to her, really. Parker, really. Yeah. I think he was just getting tunnel vision and being Nate-like and tunnel vision on the job. So
that's true. He's, like, fiddling with the touchscreen computer thing. So...
And he doesn't do feelings. He doesn't deal with feelings. Sophie deals with feelings.
Yeah. So they're, you know, he starts doing the explanation of the job. And Sophie's like, this is the worst. Like, the people who pull cons like this are the worst. She's like, it's tacky. I've never even done this. But they're also saying, like, it's, like, one of the oldest tricks in the book to do this.
I love that, like, at these very random moments, like, Sophie just has these, like, really indignant, like, society matron, like, you know, this is uncivilized. You know,
this is how we do things. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So this family has, like, operated all over the country. They've been doing this everywhere, but whenever they're reported, she has these bulletproof aliases, and they just get away with it and move on to the next city. And they find out that she's recently bought a wall safe, which brings Parker out of her funk to admire the safe, and that she's got, like, probably has, like, $500,000.
She's a horrible person, but she has good taste in home security.
Exactly. I love when they also, like, begrudgingly admire their work. You know, they're like, ah, they're awful, but they got style.
You gotta respect they got game. You gotta respect that they got game.
Yeah, exactly. and then Hardison and Elliot come back. And I love, like, the ongoing joke with Hardison having dust allergies. And he has to go to town hall record halls and, like...
He is such a whiny baby about it.
Allergies are awful. As someone suffering with oak allergies right now, they're no fun.
Oh, no, I have had horrible allergy attacks. I understand. But I just, that's just the way that Al displays it, which is so enjoyable. Like, he is so, like, it's like he has the man cold. And, like, it is the end of the world that I am about to die, you know?
Well, isn't that, like, a funny parallel to what happens later? Like, I'm going to die. These allergies are so bad. To, I'm stuck in a coffin. I could die if you don't get me in time. And like, hard, like, Elliot being so annoyed with them, being like, oh my God, if I have to go do this, like, be alone in a basement again.
Like, I cannot deal with his whining.
Yeah. So they, oh yeah, they're going to go to the funeral home and they're going to go steal a funeral. And it's been a while, I think, since Nate said, let's go steal something. Which I'm like, oh, hey, it's good to see that again. And when they were filming, they used an actual funeral home. So when... real body bag. So when Beth gets out of that body bag and is walking around in the basement, like, those are all the actual, like, tools and instruments that you would use to embalm.
That is so creepy.
Right? Oh, but it's real. It's legit. So man, they did anything they wanted in Portland. So Hardison is there playing and not overplaying a guy who's there to talk about a funeral for his aunt, and he's wearing fancy cufflinks that are annoying him, but that's gonna signal.
I still don't know what cufflinks actually do.
They keep their, instead of like a button, you know, like on the end of your sleeve.
Yes.
So on really fancy button down shirts, they don't have a button there.
So you have a
cufflink, so it's like a buttonhole all the way through, and the cufflink goes through the holes and then, like, flips so that it keeps your sleeves together.
That seems unnecessarily fussy and ornate.
Well, yes.
And but that also feeds into what, like Sophie said, only really rich people have good cufflinks, and Darlene will pick up on that.
Exactly. Yeah. If he wasn't rich, he would have a regular shirt that buttoned. So, yeah, it's definitely a signifier of wealth and
so status. That's why he had to get upgraded to a pair of cufflinks.
Exactly. Yeah, and he looks very good in this gray suit. And that's when I also was like, she is so tall. And they bring up Hardison's claustrophobia because he doesn't want to go look at the coffins, and or he didn't want to be in the body bag. And
isn't that what he mumbles? Like, it is a legitimate thing. I have a doctor's note.
And Parker's going around with a metal detector to try to find the safe so she can get into it and find the money. And so she's crawling all around, and it's not on the in the basement. So now she's got to go up to the third floor or the second floor and go through their home. And meanwhile, Sophie and Nate are at one person's funeral, and Elliot is showing up for an ex-con's funeral. But it's not ex-cons.
But wait a minute. Even for an ex-con, like, can't you show more respect than showing up in those raggedy-ass clothes? Show some respect.
Well, you don't know what his other friends look like. They might have been in worse.
But this is a funeral. No matter who it was, you show up with show some respect. You don't show up in raggedy clothes.
Again, depends on where you are. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I agree, like, you should be respectful. But then he, like, rolls with it really well. He's like, oh, I got caught up with at a drug bust in Dorchester. And they're like,
okay,
oh.
Okay.
Flask.
Now, we know from the Beantown bailout job, like, there was, like, a whole criminal thing in Boston, like, organized crime, drug, like. Mm-hmm. In real life, Boston, is that a real situation? Like, is organized crime, like, a real thing in Boston, and gangs and drugs and all that stuff? Like,
I don't know. Probably.
Yeah.
I feel like, yeah. I mean, I think they're going to be drugs in any big city. And trafficking of other sorts as well.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, is it to the extent that they have a gang task force or something, but or like organized crime task force, but who knows?
Yeah, it's a huge city. I think
in the leverage verse, I guess, like, the gangs are, like, running amok.
He didn't say it was a gang task force. He just said it was a drugs bust. Like, it could have been just...
Yeah, and he's wearing, like, a gray sweatshirt and, like, a beanie and, like, looking real disreputable.
Yeah.
Very disreputable.
But they gave him a flask and they accepted him.
And how mad was he? Like, these are ex-cop. You got me going to a funeral for an ex-cop. And he's like ready to kill Hardison.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to punch you so hard your ancestors feel it.
And Hardison's like,
they must have changed their schedule. I didn't know. Sorry. I can't do everything. And then in the...
didn't you always brag that you can and do everything, Hardison?
Well, this is just proof that he needs help sometimes, and he shouldn't have to do everything.
I mean, it's like, you can't have it both ways, Hardison. Either you want some respect for doing everything, if you're complaining about doing everything, then you got to be on the ball and do everything. That's all I'm saying.
Well, maybe he will be when they appreciate him enough.
Him and Lucille.
Yes. Oh, Lucille. Yeah. Okay, so...
So, like, Elliot's trying to blend in.
Darlene is trying to upsell this very expensive coffin called the Admiral. And Hardison's like, I don't even want to touch it. No.
That thing was so ostentatious. And, like, it's, like, so, like... But it's so overtly nautical. Like, how is that going to have mass popular appeal? I don't understand.
I don't know. You're right. Like, it's called the Admiral. There's, like, a porthole that you can, like...
Thing. And then there's, like, an anchor. There's an anchor.
Oh, my God. I forgot about the anchor. Well, yeah. And there are coffins that have, like, little places where you can put mementos.
Yeah.
Rebecca Kirsch was, like, talking about all the research that she did and, like, all the awful things that they'll do in funeral homes to, like, screw people over.
Ugh.
She was like, it's disgusting what they'll do. Mm. So, and then Sophie and Nate are at this other funeral, and she's judging the young wife, the young widow, who has a new beau with her. She's very, like, she's like, what a hussy. And then she's like, oh, he looks nice.
Oh, that tart. Was it a tart, a hussy, a trop, or something like that?
Yeah.
Sophie is very judgmental.
Yeah.
She's very judgmental.
Yeah. There's a way to do things, and if you don't do them.
Like, for someone who commits crime, she has, like...
Yeah. And then... Oh, sorry. And then Parker's almost caught by the sons. But luckily she's already outside, clinging to the windowsills of this building, and nobody has noticed.
Or was that a stunt double? Do we know?
Actually, I don't know. They didn't really mention it.
Like, given what we know about these people, I wouldn't be surprised if Beth wanted to do it herself.
Right. I don't know. Because it looks like her. And she almost falls, and she's, like, clinging to the windowsill, and Sophie, like, yells, "Oh, bloody hell!"
Like, totally breaks character. Totally breaks character.
Which is very... way out of the ordinary for her. But then, like, we get some great Sophie and Nate improvising to distract everybody from the windows, and, you know, they, like,
a whole family thing. Like, Sophie, like, forgot to keep, like, her character going because she was, like, that scared for Parker. And they do, like, a great little thing, and then, like, she had to get in that dig at that, like, widow. You know, as lovely as she is faithful. And then, like, and the widow actually gets guilted because, like, the guy she was, like,
padding with. Guy.
Playing hanky-panky with, or as they said it in, like, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, playing patty cake with.
It just reminded me of that scene from The First Wives Club when the ex-husband is, like, sitting there and he's, like, caressing the boob of the new wife at the funeral.
Oh, God, yes, at Cynthia's funeral. Ugh,
yeah.
So crass. But
a friend of mine just watched that for the first time. I'm like, oh, look at you. That movie's so great.
Like, I remember I watched Who Framed Roger Rabbit as a kid, and I totally did not get the innuendo of the patty cake scene. I did not get the innuendo. No. And I shouldn't have.
You weren't supposed to.
Yeah.
So, you know, they distract everybody from the windows for long enough, and Parker gets up to the third floor and climbs in a very weird window and complains about pulling heists in buildings with that many windows. And then she doesn't find the safe. But underneath a bed, she finds an envelope that's taped to the underside, and it's got social security cards and all the other things to steal identities. And so then they realize that they're actually running two scams at once. They're, you know, taking people's money, and then they're selling people's identities after they're dead. And as soon as they find this out, Elliot sees a dude come in and text Darlene to meet him, and follows them and finds out it's a guy named Javier who she is selling identities to. Javier is played, oh my gosh, I'm not gonna be able to pull his name up right away, but he also is on the amazing show One Day at a Time.
Victor!
Yes, he's Victor from One Day at a Time.
Right? Oh my God. I just put that together when you mentioned One Day at a Time. I'm like, oh my God, that was totally there.
Yeah, I was like watching it and I'm like, he looks so familiar. What else? He's probably like one of those guys who's been in everything. And I was like, oh, One Day at a Time.
And I am so happy Lynn, LMM, and Rita Marin and everybody was able to save the show and we're getting a season 4.
Right?
Woo!
Gosh, it's like, it's on now, I think. It's on Pop TV.
Yeah.
Canada, baby, save the day.
So that was Victor. Like, oh my God, yes. Can we call him Victor for the rest of the podcast?
We can call him Victor, except for when we call him Javier, because that is what Nate calls him. Nate does not say Javier. He keeps saying Javier as if he is French.
Or maybe some like later in Boston accent or something.
No, he just says Javier. It's so dumb.
Was it like, maybe that was like a slip of the tongue and then Timothy Hutton decided to just go with it?
I don't know. It was stupid. I believe that. And or he just didn't realize he was saying it wrong, and no one was like, dude, you're saying it wrong. Yeah, so they find out, you know, she's actually doing two cons. And then Nate decides that instead of stealing from Darlene, they're going to con her for everything she's got. And they're going to, like, screw her over with this other job she's working as well. And then we have that really sweet scene that you were talking about where Parker is still, like, really processing through all these feelings that the Newtons, this like, family has brought up.
She feels for the brother and sister, like,
yeah,
you know, like, why would you open yourself up to that sort of thing? And yeah, if he's like, with the right people, with the right person, this family we got, like, it's worth it, you know? And Sophie also nailed it, like, you know, if you were young and you, like, went through something real traumatic, which Parker did, it's natural to want to protect yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was such a lovely scene between Gina and Beth. Like, they both nailed it.
Right? Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so Parker is still, like, going through this, and she and Sophie have this, like, great conversation, and I love, you know, we're talking about this. Sophie is the person who knows feelings and knows how to talk about feelings, and I think the way that she talk to Parker here is ideal, because she's couching all of these things in terms that Parker would understand, like the rush of doing this and the danger of doing this, because Parker lives for danger. And, you know, she says, you know, this and the vulnerability of being seen is how people feel alive. And Parker's like, I feel alive when I jump off buildings. and so he says, maybe that's why I call it falling in love. And you're like, oh, yeah!
That is such a fundamental, like, thing. Like I remember I was reading Courtney Milan's book, and that was the thing. Like, we all want to be seen. We all want to matter to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing like the feeling of there is someone out there who sees me, who understands me, who gets me.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's all we want in life. Just to have someone, maybe it's one person out there.
And Parker now has a bunch of them, but it's also like the terrifying realization of being known. So it's like, it's something we all crave, but it's also something that's terrifying. And if you can't get past that terror, then you can't,
because once
you don't get the reward.
And that's like, because once you let that person in, they may see your ugly stuff too. And nobody wants to have other people see your ugly stuff.
Yeah. And you have to, you know, believe that they're going to love you despite that. Yeah. And if you are the world's best thief, that's really, really hard.
I mean, like, and I think that's what that's at the heart of what makes, like, romance the genre so great, because the whole point of the genre is finding someone who loves you, maybe not despite of, but because of your ugly stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you know, who accepts you warts and all, that you're enough for them. And who was not to love without that? Was not to love without that? The story about finding that someone, you know?
That's powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's unbelievably powerful. It's a, you know, such a big industry. Everybody wants that. So, yeah. So Hardison is, they've moved on to their next stage of this con, and he is so funny, like, pretending to surveil this house. He's got, like, a big burrito. He's, like, really leaning in. He's got the big, you know, long lens.
Like, not, like, no stealth, no covert whatsoever.
He's straight up using a flash on this camera in the middle of the day. Unnecessary.
I feel like every private investigator out there is like, come on, dude.
Yeah, so good. I just love that. Like, taking a big old bite out of that burrito. So funny.
That was probably because Aldous was hungry and needed lunch.
Yeah. Yeah. So then Sophie gets to use a little old lady voice and call up and be like, oh, this is Marjorie from down the street. And
she sounded southern to me.
She just sounded like old lady to me.
Yeah.
There's someone watching your house from across the street, and I thought you should know. And I feel like Sophie's like working on a crossword puzzle while she does this because it's so easy for her. And in the commentary, Beth Riescraft was like, oh, this voice she does is so good. She was doing it in the makeup trailer trying to get it right. And it was just, we were cracking up.
I love that, like, really off, like, the camera, like, the five of them, like, that cast is, like, they truly did enjoy each other.
Yeah.
You know? I think, like, they still keep, I think, like, they still keep in touch and things like that. Like, I still feel like they probably keep in touch, like, on Twitter and stuff like that. Like, I feel like,
They've posted pictures like having dinner and stuff together.
Yeah.
Official friends. And they have each other's things and like support each other. So Darlene and her sons decide they're going to tail Hardison when he leaves. And they follow him to a diner where he meets up with Nate and they're having this conversation. And he's like, oh, yeah, I went to
like trailer. In the underground job. It was just solely for their benefit. Solely for their benefit.
So yeah, they're having this fake conversation about tailing them, and he's like, oh, you know, I don't think you should, you know, do business or make an offer.
I feel like they were, like, projecting and pitching, like, so Darlene could hear. Like,
yeah.
And like, it's a good one, like, Darlene, I love, like, Darlene's wardrobe through this episode. It is just, like, the hat she was wearing in that scene was, like, amazing.
She's just like, hiding behind this like little fedora. So cute. And then when, as soon as she's not hiding anywhere, she takes it off. So funny.
And she just always looks so sleek, you know? Yeah. Like, even when she's trying to... But yes, to having like... yeah, like she's like spilling like, look, I found out she's stealing identities. Like, I don't know about, you know, and
I don't know if you want to make an offer on this. And he's like, oh, we're good. And then he like, I don't know. It just worked out perfectly that she like looked at his credit card. Like the waitress like just set it down right there. So she could see like Google his name and see that he works for like a big chain of funeral homes.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as Hardison leaves, her boys come in and like they confront Nate, and she's like, you're spying on me, I'm gonna take you to the cops. And he's like, well, I know exactly what you're doing, so you can't do that, because I would just tell them what you're doing. So then she's like, okay, let's make a deal. You work for like this huge company, you can get me all these names, and we can make a killing. Ha.
This is where she also gives her evil speech of evil.
Oh my gosh, her evil speech. Because usually in Evil Speech of Evil, like, these people, like, have justification for the things that they're doing. She's like, no, I used to pretend to be a psychic outside of different realms. Like, and I bribe ministers to send people to us from their churches. Like, oh my God. And her sons are just like, do, 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 in the background.
It's so callous.
Oh, God.
And, like, it's, I mean, like, the evil speeches are evil, like, that usually the writers make do a good job of, like, not making it, like, snotty whiplash, like, mustache twirling, you know?
Yeah. But this one, she leans into it. So, yeah.
I feel like Emily Johnson's, like, one of those actors who loves to go for it and be ham and just go big.
Yeah.
And it works for her. So I think she just, like, worked the hell out of that scene, and it worked. You know, it's great that she sold it.
Agreed. So, yeah, so she's like, okay, if you can give me 100 identities, I'll give you $500,000. And he's like, okay, I can do 100. And then she calls Javier, Victor, to tell him that she's got 100. She's going to have 100 identities for him that night. but that she's now upped her price from 6,000 to 10,000 per identity. And then she just hangs up on him, like, ha ha ha, I did it.
And like, and it's still evil because she sold like the hardest in the store. This is a Haitian immigrant, like legal, like clean, like the best type of like identity to steal. And I'm like, oh my God, that is so evil.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's like, I got 100 more of them. Let's go. But then we find out why he, because before this, we didn't know why Victor Javier needed these identities. And now we find out that he's part of a Mexican drug cartel, and they've got people waiting at a motel in Juarez to come across as soon as they get identities. And he also calls her a witch. She's like, bruja, which I think is kind of a tame thing to say, but you know. And he's not excited about this new deal that she's come up with. And then Nate's like ready right away. He's like, okay,
I'll be here in a couple hours. He's like thinking like, what is Darlene trying to pull? Is she trying to screw me?
Yeah. So. He's just like, no, I'm not going to pay that. If she's got 100, I'm going to get them from her. Because there's no way that she just randomly came into 100 identities. Like, she must have gotten them from somebody else.
Well, yeah.
So he, you know, Nate and Hardison show up with their identities.
It looks like Darlene's bedroom where the offices were, like the private quarters of the funeral home, it looks like.
Yeah, it's her office where she was with Hardison before.
Yes.
And we see that the wall safe is actually in the fireplace, and that's why Parker couldn't find it with the metal detector. But also, Parker never went in that room, so... That's another Parker, reason why
be more thorough next time, Parker. Be more
Go in the rooms where other people are. Come on. No. And then as they're trying to get their deal done, Javier walks in and the Wickets make a run for it.
It's getting too hot for them, so they're leaving.
And they knock Nate out. And then
like, Victor is being so evil in the scene. Victor is being so evil.
I know. This is worse than not accepting his daughter and ditching her at her quinceañera. It's not okay.
And I think it's the fact that he just seems so reasonable about it.
Yeah.
No, I don't think that's what I'm going to do.
I know. I actually really like how he's playing this, like, Mexican gangster. It's not... this like stereotypical like essay, like
what, like he's not being tough. He's almost I'm just like a reasonable business man.
Yeah. And this is how I do business. Yeah. He doesn't have like a thick accent, like he's just like
not a lot of no bling. Like I don't think there were a lot of tattoos, I don't think.
No, he didn't have any. Well, I think he might have had one on his arm, but like not a lot.
Yeah,
you know, he does have the like the button down flannel shirt with the one button at the top buttoned with the white shirt underneath, but
yeah,
other than that, he looked not too rough.
Respectable, even.
Yeah, I mean, they're flying under the radar, which I think is which I think is smart. Then we get Elliot trying to get Nate to come too. And, you know, he's like, I tried to get here as soon as I heard things were going bad, but you didn't ask me to come along, so I couldn't help you. And
he's always so cranky when, like...
No, it's because he feels guilt. He's like, I should have been here to help, and you wouldn't let me help. And that's my job, is to keep you safe.
Like, just secure the perimeter.
Yeah. It takes them a second to realize that Hardison's not there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, where did he go? And they find a knife that they dropped. And Elliot, of course, recognizes the inscription on the knife. And he knows the gang.
Wait, do we get it's a very distinctive? Or
no.
Do we not get a very distinctive?
No. Okay. And even earlier, he just says, wasn't a distinctive knife style, unfortunately. But then Nate notices that the coffin's missing, and he's like, oh God. They know that Hardison's in this coffin somewhere.
Like, no bueno. No bueno.
No. No. Malo. Malo. And I was like, is it awful that I think that Aldous looks super beautiful in this lighting with just, like, the cell phone light and his coffin?
The shade of the gray on the suit, like, complements his skin very well.
Yeah, and in the dark with the blue glow from the phone,
yes,
it works. Yes. Yeah. So,
like, good job, Nadine, head of wardrobe, maybe.
Yeah, Nadine, shout out, giving Darlene that great hat too. Good job. I love Nadine. Okay, so Javier is on the phone with Hardison, telling him that he can use his phone to get a hold of his crew, and they need to bring the IDs to this location, like a baseball field somewhere. And so the team is stressing. Elliot's still angry that he wasn't there to help, and they get the call, and Hardison calls Parker. And he's, like, you know, understandably freaking out because they took his earpiece, so they can't track him on GPS. And
Elliot doesn't make things better when he's, like, he's got about 20 or 30 minutes of oxygen in there.
Yeah. Luckily, I don't think Hardison could hear that. But, like, yeah. If you told me that, I would have lost my damn mind.
You would have hyperventilated and gave yourself less than the 20.
Yeah, I would have been out in, like, 10 minutes. I would have been done for.
Yeah. I would too.
Right? So they're trying to narrow down where he could possibly be buried. There's open fields and stuff, but that would be noticeable, like, if they tried to bury him in a park or something. So they know it has to be a cemetery.
Like in the Beanie Bale job said, look, if you have a dead body, like, you're going to drive under the speed limit. Like, they don't want to be conspicuous.
Yeah, so they won't have gone far.
Yeah.
And he's probably
It would have to be somewhere where, like, some freshly dug up dirt wouldn't be a thing.
So there's got to be a cemetery. He can't be buried really deep because that would have taken too long. And
they would have gotten reception. So,
yeah, like, exactly.
You can't be that deep if you can actually still get cell signal. So, yeah.
Yeah. Through this super fancy pine box that you're in. So, Hardison also hears, like, water rushing. He hears water rushing, and so they realize that's another signal that he's not buried very deep because that's the sprinkler system. And, you know, so they're like, oh, if he can hear that, he could probably hear something else. So I love
these are all good things. These are all good clues we can work with.
Exactly. Now we can make a plan. So then they fake a couple of 911 calls.
Which is illegal.
Everything they do is illegal, Lisa. Everything, they're criminals.
Okay.
These bad guys are the good guys. Do you not know what the show's about?
No.
Okay, so what they do is, though, they do fake some 911 calls to get a cop car and an ambulance. And then, which is so smart because they're different sirens.
Could I tell you? Very, very loud. Very loud.
Yeah. And they're going to drive around to, like, the five different cemeteries nearby and see if Hardison can hear anything.
Mm-hmm.
And Hardison is, like, freaking out. He manages to get his keys out of him and, like, he's cutting at the top of the coffin and he's wigging out. And Sophie tells Parker, you have to help him. Like, you are used to being stuck in close quarters.
You know how to control air supply.
Breathing, you can help him. He needs you. And so she, like, goes into the back of the ambulance to, like, you know, try to talk him through this. And
give herself a little privacy, too, because this is, like, potentially one of the hardest things she's ever had to do.
Right?
Was ever going to have to do.
So she's coaching him through, like, breathing techniques and stuff. And he, like, begs her not to get off the phone. And he's crying.
Oh!
And
poor baby. Your heart!
I know. And so she's like, can you hear anything in the background? And finally he can hear the ambulance sirens. So they're like, okay, it's this one, it's this one. And then Nate, so they've turned off their siren, Nate and Elliot, and he calls Javier, and he can hear the ambulance sirens in the background too. So they know that they're not at this baseball diamond where they're
supposed to be. He's watching over Hardison.
Yeah, he's actually where Hardison is. And so he's like, all right, so we're just going to go confront him at the cemetery. And, you know, Elliot comes up behind him and then, like, fights. And this fight took way too long. I was like, Elliot, Hardison is buried in the ground. Why did you not knock this man out in one hit?
Why are you not taking care of business?
Exactly. Like, come on. Are you, I guess you're just.
I mean, they're also dodging machine gun fire, Steve. Come on.
That's later, because they knocked it out of his hand, and then he's fighting him with a shovel. But well, then, yes.
So you're saying he should have been able to do it with one good hit?
Yes. He knocked out those other gangsters with a baseball bat or something. I don't know. It just took too long. It might have been because I was stressed out. Because Hardison is buried in the ground.
You're worried about your baby, Hardison.
I'm worried about my baby. And
it's very clear he's your favorite character.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. I said that from day one. There's never any... never been any, like, hesitation about that. No one is surprised. And Parker and Sophie are searching for clues to try to figure out.
And Sophie is like, has her shovel, she's ready to dig and get her hands dirty. So you know shit is real. Like,
yes.
So shit is real. Shit is getting real.
Mm-hmm. That's the proper thing to do now. There's going to be, you know, a grand dame about this. And I love this. Hardison has gotten the, like, decorative compass that was in the porthole. And he knows that Parker still has the metal detector that she gave him, and he could tell that she's, like, right above him because the compass is on wild.
Yeah.
And he's,
Gina and Beth were, like, playing that scene really well. Like, where is he? How do we find him? We're out of time. Like, what do we do? You know?
Well, because they had him legit buried right under there. And they were, like, even though they knew it wasn't real, they're like, okay, can we dig him out now? Can we do this now? Come on, he's under there. We got to get him out.
But meanwhile, all this is just chilling.
Yeah, he's, like, taking a little nap. He brought a snack. I don't know. So she's digging, and I'm like, I would have picked up a whole bunch more with my shovel than they were doing, but okay. And
put your back into it.
What?
Put your back into it, shovel.
Exactly. I would have gone down to, like, hit it and then just, like, but then Javier kind of recovers and he grabs the machine gun and he comes after them. So Nate has to, like, they all have to hide behind gravestones. And then Parker
does, like, some stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And that you can definitely tell is a stunt double. So she goes, and she's got, like, a Bluetooth on at this point to talk to Hardison, and he's losing oxygen, like, he's about to die, and she's like, all right, I need you to take a deep breath and hold it, and she's telling him, like, you need to be safe, you need to fight this.
You need to make it through this, because you're my friend, you cannot do this to me.
And then she called him Alec. It's just a lot of feelings. And he's crying, and he's, like, holding his breath. And then Nate tackles Javier Victor, and Sophie grabs the gun off him, and then Parker takes the gun from her and tells Hardison to move to his left, and then she shoots holes in the other side of the coffin so he can get air.
So they buy him some time so they can, like, get him out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then finally, Elliot's done.
Where he's like, he sees the air and he calms down visibly.
Yeah.
I'm going to be okay.
You take a breath. And then Elliot finally finishes beating up that man. Just one guy. One guy. Where in the very first episode, we watched Elliot beat the shit out of three guys before his duffel bag hit the ground.
Is it safe to say you're very disappointed at Elliot's performance at this?
I was disappointed. Disappointed. He slid across oil and shut people up in the finale of last season. One guy. One guy. Anyways, he runs. He's very stressed. I will give him that. He's like freaking out because his baby boy.
His bro is in danger. He's not at the top of his game. He's having a bad day.
I'll give him that. Like, I would be a mess as well. So who knows how long it would take.
I'm very disappointed in Elliot's performance.
Yeah, but I'm not disappointed in his reaction to getting Hardison out of the coffin or in his hug. It was a very good hug. He obviously, because he's like, never do that to me again. He like is nuzzling into his neck. It was good for me.
They broed it out.
Yes. You know how I feel about the two of them. It's not bros. And then Nate gives him a big hug. Sophie gives him a big hug. Because he's Hardison, he gets that. And he just, like, nods at her. And they just, like, look at each other. And, like, he's so good.
He's just been through a lot. She can't handle a hug right now.
He
gets it.
Yeah, he does. And I think that's amazing. Because I don't think there are a lot of characters or people who do get that.
As the grifter, Sophie has the most highest level of like emotional like intelligence, which helps her read people. But I think like it was in the juror number six job, like Nate tells her, you have those skills too. When your Nana sent you out to be a Jehovah's Witness, like you know how to read people too. So he read the situation. He's not taking it personally. Parker just needs some space to process. It's all good.
Yeah. We've talked a lot about like Sophie understands people, Elliot understands people, and he's probably the most emotionally healthy of them. And I don't know that I would say that Hardison always understands all people, but for some reason he understands Parker.
He understands his people.
Yeah. And he's always like from the beginning given her the space that she needs and like has approached her in a way that, you know, is going to be the best way.
He's given her her space. Yes.
Yeah. And he recognizes that. And I don't think a lot of people can do that. And I think that's just a really amazing way to write a character. So back at the bar, Nate gives the clients their money, their dad's money, plus some to pay off their credit cards. And he tells them that he's going to find the other victims and give them money as well.
Oh,
and she's like,
if you hadn't let us know about her, they would have gone on hurting people. So you guys are the heroes.
Yes, your dad would be so proud of you. And you're just like, okay.
I feel like season one, Nate wouldn't have bothered to do that.
Look,
here's your money. You're good. Go, go with God. Go with God.
Right. Yeah. No. And I love, like, we're not done yet. Like, they got away. Hardison's alive. But she asks, like, what's going to happen to the Wickets? And he's like, oh, don't worry. We took care of them. They're, like, trying to get their new false identities.
We got something for Darlene.
Oh, yeah. So they're getting their new funeral license figured out. And the
Florida.
And the cops come in and take them in.
I just love this. When the cop walks in and then the receptionist just gives them like that little look.
That was great. She's just like. The other lady comes out. She's like, well, it says you died in Massachusetts 3 years ago.
And what does Dean Devlin say? The villain must always be brought down by their own sin. She stole identity. She gets taken down by stealing an identity.
Exactly. And then, because she was not our only bad guy in this episode, we also have
To take care of Victor. We have to take care of Victor.
Yes. So we flash back and we see that he got away with the fake identities that they had left. And so they set him up. He's got Hardison's earpiece, which has GPS. So
I love that they have, like, he probably has no idea that it's, like, GPS trackable. And Hardison's like, probablemente no.
So silly. So they track him down. They get a picture of the license plate on the truck that they're in, which is KNS, and then, like, a number, like, 10, 12 or something. And KNS means where is it? Where are they in Spanish? KNS. So QNS. KNS.
KNS is who are you?
It's a joke. Spanish. Who is it? I'm like, so great. And then the number is apparently like the stolen identity. It's the number for some police code.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Did not know that. Good bit of trivia.
Yeah, I looked that up and then I forgot it when I didn't write it down in my notes. Good job, Christina. And then so they get taken down and like this Homeland Security officer, she's just like, welcome to Texas.
I mean, as a Texas girl, did you feel like a little bit of like Texas pride in that moment?
Yeah, we took down the bad guy. I like that it was a woman. I like that a lot. They said in the commentary, and he said this before, and I really love this about John Rogers, when they were like deciding that it would be Hardison who'd be in the coffin, you know, he told Beth, he was like, you've never seen us do this and we would never do it because I hate it when women are the ones who are in peril and have to be saved. So like in Leverage, that never happens. Or if it does happen, Sophie and Parker or Maggie or whoever, Tara, like save themselves. Like they don't need a man to come riding in on a horse.
They take care of themselves.
And I'm like.
Like that song. Like that Cheetah Girls song. Like I'd rather rescue myself.
Yes.
I wanna be a Cinderella. Yeah. I'd rather rescue myself.
Exactly.
But I have to say, like, normally I would be like, you know, Hardison was having a little shot in Frada, like, yeah, look, you wanna put me in a coffin, this is what you get.
Yeah, he's like, should you really be dancing? And he's like, he put me in a coffin. And Nate's like, that's fair.
Oh, like even Nate was like, okay, like you go.
Get me there. And then so this is like the third episode in a row, I think, that is ends with Parker. Because this is really her season, I think. And she's sitting by herself in the bar, like thinking, and Hardison comes over and he, you know, formally, because he hadn't said it actually out loud, like thanks her for talking him through it and saving him. Aww. And she's like, oh no, you would have been fine. And he like gives her this kiss on her cheek and then he like lingers and he's like right by her and he's like, no, thank you. And then he like goes, he does what he does so well, and he like gives her her space,
which makes us and makes her love him even more.
Yes. And so she's just kind of like sits there with that, and he like walks slowly and he kind of lingers in the background for a minute before he leaves, and
he's not like being pushy, he's not being aggressive, he's letting her set the pace.
Like, exactly. He doesn't like expect things from her, just like, you're so good.
He really is.
Ugh. I know. What are we going to do with this perfect little man? All right. Any last thoughts on this episode?
I think we covered just about everything and like a ton of stuff that didn't have along the way.
We did a pretty good job.
As is our want. I just have to say, like, I don't know why, but I was obsessed with Darlene's, like, wardrobe throughout this episode. Like, I wish I could pull off that stuff, but I can't. But, it was a really, like, I this was like one of my favorite episodes because of all the character development, all the Parker stuff, and because I love Anne-Marie Johnson as an actor. And now, like, it has blown my mind, and he will now forever be Victor to me. In this episode, he's no longer Javier, he is Victor.
I know, it was wild.
I did not put it together. Like, there was something niggling in the back of my mind. Like, have I seen him before? I never put it together that it was Lupe's ex. Did not put it together. Do you have a heist light?
I had one, but I hadn't actually read through it a bunch. But do you have one?
Well, I found one that was, like, really short.
Okay.
This was a news article from California. There were 5 San Bernardino County residents who collected 500 people to help pay for a funeral for a baby. But it was a scam. There was no baby.
What?
So, yeah. right. I mean, the end of it just says, the local sheriffs and stuff like that are trying to find information about these people. But they got the money. They got the money back.
Okay, explain to me, they were crowdsourcing for a funeral for a baby that didn't exist?
Oh, they were panhandling. So they were at an intersection, somewhere. Kind of like, like the Salvation Army, like Santa's.
Yeah.
It's like that sort of deal. So they had a sign, and then there was a picture of a baby, and they're saying they're collecting money for the baby Jacob. But the deputy said that there was no funeral and there was no baby. So they took the money from the 5 scammers. So, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a darling level of evil.
Yeah, I did not look up funeral cons because that's just too dark. Because it's so awful.
It is.
I can't imagine.
So, what was the one you found? I know you say you didn't read it so early, but, what was the
I just found...
What is the main gist of it? What happened?
Yeah, well, it was just a cute article. It has nothing to do with anything with this episode, but it's like a list of 5 memorable library heists. And a couple of them, in January 2020, CNN reported that a former employee at a Carnegie Library in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, had used his position to steal $8 million worth of rare books and other items.
What? $8 million? Who knew libraries were such a hotbed?
$8 million worth of rare books. Yeah. Over a period of 25 years. And then, that's the first thing that just happened in 2020. But then they have, this article has a list of other library heists.
Pittsburgh. My neck of the woods. Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Okay, well, this next guy, the book bandit, it was a man named Steven Bloomberg, who was really rich and then liked to steal books. So he spent years roaming North America stealing books. By the time he was arrested in 1990, he'd absconded with $5.3 million worth of books from 45 states, the District of Columbia, and 2 Canadian provinces.
Wait, were these rare books like the other guy? Were they just
yeah,
so many books?
I don't know. They don't say. Well, they say from the University of Oregon alone, he pilfered a whopping 9,000 irreplaceable documents detailing the lives of Oregon's earliest white settlers.
So
historical documents.
So he wasn't stealing James Patterson. He's stealing valuable artifacts, the primary source stuff.
Yeah. And then as punishment, he for perpetrating what is the most expensive library heist in history, he received a 71-month prison sentence and a fine that amounted to a fraction of his thefts. And he's been in and out of trouble ever since.
73, that's only 6 years. That's only 6 years.
Yeah. So the next one is The Prince Doctor. In 2011, Marino Massimo De Caro was appointed the director of Biblioteca Girolamini, Naples' oldest library. He came with an impressive list of credentials, including a royal title and a professorship at the University of Siena. And then they say, I'll just skip to the punchline now. De Caro had neither of those things. What he did have was a bunch of greedy and unethical friends with whom he would turn off the security cameras every night and raid the place. Within a couple of years, the Girolamini was a shambles of empty shelves, paper-strewn tables, and mounting trash. A dog was even seen roaming the premises.
Oh, Lord.
Before their arrest, De Caro and company made off with millions of euros worth of rare books. Some pieces remain missing to this day. So if you stumble across 16th century copies of Dante's Divine Comedy or Thomas More's Utopia, there's a library in Italy that would like to speak to you. Oh my gosh. Yeah,
that's what I love about, like, Europe, though. Like, it's, like, no big deal. Of course you can just go to a store and, like, touch books that are 400 or 500 years old. You know, the church you go to every week, that was, like, erected in, like, 900 AD. Like, it's no big deal. Like,
900 BC. Yeah. I know. I was reading a post, like, things are spooky in Europe because they're old, and things are spooky in America because it's big. And, like, you know, neither of us can kind of, like, understand, like, wow, your building is 100 years old, but, like, it's 100 miles for me to get home from here, you know?
And yeah, I'm still in, like, my city. Yeah, like, something about, like, Europeans are freaked out when something, like, so too far away, but Americans are freaked out when something, how old something is.
Yeah.
Like Farrah Rochon, poor Farrah, a year or two ago, maybe 3 years ago, she was in Ireland. And she's like, I am in a pub that's been around since, like, 1190 or something like that. And I'm like,
love it. I love it.
You know, it's like, we have no sense of history here, I feel like. We're all about, like, what's new. Like, and, like, we have no respect for the past. Like,
right? Like, oh, this is old and kind of not made well. We're going to tear it down and build something new. That's why we don't have old things. We won't let them get old. But that's the whole other thing. Okay, let's wrap this up. I will put the...
And I will email you the funeral scam link. You can post it on the show notes.
Yes, thank you. Okay. And I'll post my library ones, and which also had a couple more things. Several more, so you can read about.
I am just like, that dude went around stealing books over the country in 2 Canadian provinces.
I know. Also, there's a television show that my friend Holly just told me that I should watch called Blood and Treasure, and it's on Amazon Prime. And it sounds right up my alley. It's like
I've an archaeology. Seen it.
Have you seen it?
I think
it has Odette Fair in it.
I think it's very steep. Yes, you would enjoy it.
Yeah. Okay. I was like, there's an art thief. There's excitement, there's mummies, there's this guy who was on a season of Sleepy Hollow. He looks like a hockey player I love. So I'm like, yes, this is very me. Me.
And they're coming out with the season 2 soon, apparently.
Yes, I read that. I was like, Googling. So if you want more along these lines, it kind of gave me librarian's feels, but without supernatural stuff, maybe.
That sounds about right.
Okay. So yeah. So Leverage fans, if you haven't already watched it, you might like it. Might be up your alley too. So Lisa, tell people where they can find you on the internet.
La Foresta One. And I am social distancing, as everybody should. And wash your hands, people, and keep your asses at home.
Yes. Yes. I'm trying to do that as much as humanly possible when I can. And I'm on Twitter at LibrarianST. So yeah, we'll be back in 2 weeks and we'll be talking about the next episode of Leverage.
I think it's the boiler room job, is it?
I don't remember.
I will be back for the girls' night out job. So you won't see me for a couple weeks.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited for that episode. Honestly, every episode of the season is amazing. Like, let's be honest. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for being on. Thank you for struggling through our technical difficulties.
Thank you.